This morning, I would like to begin with a special prayer, if that would be okay. With every head bowed and every cell phone taken out. Every cell phone taken out, if you want to live a new life in Jesus Christ, would you please text message me right now? That's a joke. Now, for those of you, most of us probably do, but not everybody knows what a text message is. You can type in things on your notepad, on your pad here, and you can send a message to people that you know. I love this thing. I'm kind of nuts about it. And my kid's dad, stop, you know? You know, when I started doing it, I said, man, this is neat. And even some of the staff here at church, you know, pastor, just talk to us. Stop texting us. We're okay with that. You know, we can just talk. But you kind of wonder about things, though, these days, don't you? With the way we could communicate, with the kinds of technology that we have this day. And in some ways, I love this. I love my cell phone. Many of you know I had the opportunity to travel last summer, and I was in Spain seeing some friends, and I could stand on some of the most historic sites we've ever heard of, and my family wasn't with me. I could call them from Spain, and in a moment, we could be talking, and I could be sharing experiences with them. I could take pictures and send it to them. They could see us right away. And the kind of freedom that this gives me to communicate with my family and friends and even staff here is a wonderful gift. On the other hand, because you know there is another hand. Last week I was sitting at home, sitting in a chair we have upstairs and watching TV, and it had been a long day at work. And I wanted to tell my son something who was downstairs. And to do that, I had to walk 6 feet out the hallway, 12 steps down, 6 feet to his room, tell him, walk 6 feet back, 12 steps up, 6 feet back into my room to sit down again, and I saw my phone. So I opened it up, and I didn't even dial the number. I just hit speed dial. And I told him what I wanted to tell him. And it was, and you know the weirdest part? Is he took it like it was normal. Understood, Dad, I'll do it. Whatever you ask me to do. Isn't that sick? And I wonder why I'm out of shape, right? Well, I need to get in shape. This is a gift. It gives us the freedom to communicate with others. On the other hand, it also gives us the freedom not to connect with others sometimes. A text isn't like talking on the phone, but sometimes a text feels easier, doesn't it? And talking on the phone isn't like talking in person, but sometimes talking on the phone is a little easier, less time. And talking in person isn't like gathering a group together in which we can fellowship together. But sometimes we use this not just for the freedom of connecting with each other, but the freedom to stay separated from each other. We come here today wanting to celebrate the new life in Jesus Christ and the freedom we have been given in resurrection. You know, the last couple months, we've been talking about issues of freedom in our life. Before Easter, we did a whole series on forgiveness and how to be able to forgive ourselves, receive God's forgiveness, to be able to forgive those who have offended us, or to receive forgiveness from those we have offended gives us a sense of freedom. Freedom that we can live in that love of Christ. The last couple weeks, following Easter, we talked about the freedom to live as those who received that grace. Know the new life. Know death does not win. And that we are not about just planting seeds of new life and just coming to hear the Easter story, but to take those seeds and to bring them to full fruit, to live in the ways of grace, like that wonderful tomato. Those last week, remember? You bite into that juicy, wonderful tomato. Full life, but you got to work at that. You've got to receive those seeds of new life and grace. When we come here today to know what the resurrection is about and how we live that, you know, sometimes I am amazed at what the disciples did after they saw Jesus again. We know after they experienced that resurrection of Jesus Christ inside themselves, internally, they received that love and that grace. They celebrated and grew in their faith and ministry because they were in a hard shape, bad shape at the time. After the crucifixion, they were afraid they were going to be crucified as well, confused about what they should do, ready to quit, cynical about the world around them, I am sure, and yet, when they experienced resurrection, you know, they were freed from their fear, freed from their confusion, and received that powerful act of grace. But the amazing thing, I think, is what they did next. You know, you can imagine one of the disciples saying to themselves, you know, I'm free now. Christ is back in my life. I'm free from fear. I don't have to be afraid anymore. I'm free now. I'm free from the sin in my life. I don't have to live to that or kowtow to that. I can be forgiven. I'm free from the brokenness. And I'm free and with a purpose. But then I think they might have also said this. Because you know the disciples, right? You know that bunch of 12? They didn't get it. They argued. You know, I'm sure groups don't do that this day in churches. They got together, they argued, they had at it. But I can imagine one of the disciples saying, you know, now I'm free. Not only free from sin and brokenness, I'm free from those other disciples. I've got Jesus. I don't need them anymore. I'm going home and living the grace God has given me. And yet, what happens? What happens? They don't do that, but they come together. You know that bumper sticker, don't you? The more I get to know people, how does that end? What is that? I heard it back there someplace. Isn't it interesting we know that? The more I get to know people, the better I like my dog. You know, we chuckle at that. The first service, they chuckled really well at that. Isn't that an interesting commentary? How we know that, we chuckle that, and we see the truth in that. And the same goes just not for friends and family, but same goes for church and groups together. You know, our cell phone allows us to stay separated from each other. The grace of our Lord Jesus Christ allows us to be redeemed without anybody else. We don't need a priest or anybody. But also, does it give us the problem of not having to connect with others? They came together as church to love in a new way. They came together as church to be an open community of grace. It wasn't just those who were Jewish that were invited, like Jesus was. It wasn't those who spoke one language. It was open to all people, all classes, all sins. Everybody was welcome at the table. It was a new way to do mission and a new way to do family at church. And I wonder about us today. If our times were their times and we had received the resurrection with our cultural context, where we talk about it's important to have our individual rights and freedoms, would we have responded in the same way? Or would we have separated ourselves from each other because we knew we had Christ? We don't need anybody else. And yet just think about that. If we're left to our own devices, where do we all end up? If we're left just to our own selves, if we don't listen to those who will try to help us, if we don't want to be a part of other communities or work through difficult things together, where would we all be? By ourselves, making bad decisions. That's where we'd be. Christ calls us to be community together. And even though the gift we have in this country, to have the individual rights and freedoms that we have, it's a huge gift. We ought to celebrate that even more. But I think our challenge isn't that. It's how do we live that love together and not let things separate us? How do we become community together and live in the freedom of being able to love each other and be together? How do we live in that community of Christ and be that church? Because when we do that, amazing and wonderful things happen. This last week, I know some of you probably were watching TV and listening to the radio as well as I was. And we had an awful 40th anniversary. Do you know, anybody know what I'm talking about? It was the 40th anniversary where we heard of Martin Luther King Jr. Being assassinated. Listening to the radio and watching the TV, there were some interesting and wonderful stories out there. They've been publishing some of his sermons that we hadn't heard before. And it's a real gift to hear some of the stuff that he said before. We all know the kind of life-changing action he did with the Southern Christian Leadership Council, SCLC. We know how they changed the world, but you also know they didn't always get along. Did you know that? King's organization? They argued a little bit. But it's interesting to know. You know, when we think of massive changes, what are those things built on? Another individual that dealt with issues of racism in his society was Nelson Mandela. Do you remember him? Nelson Mandela, who worked in South Africa to get rid of the evil apartheid system that separated people and hurt people, put people in prison because they didn't give them their rights politically or economically. You know, Nelson Mandela, who worked towards that, was put in prison for 27 years because of what he argued for and wanted right for his people. And yet, even when he went to prison in that time, He sought to build community within the people that he knew. It wasn't just an ideological stance that he took. When he was in prison, he sought to acquire blankets and other necessities for prisoners who were in need, to build that community, to care for them right there, not just to care for his country. And you know how he did this? This is what's the message. Not that he did that, because that just makes sense. Work with people who are around you. What he did is he did not protest for human rights or that we needed blankets or that we needed this. As Nelson Mandela went to the guards, knew the language they spoke and learned their language while he was in prison. Now, how many of us have even learned the language of our neighbors around us? He learned the language of his captors. He read their literature. He read their books, not to use against them, but to convince them that the prisoners should be treated fairly. As it was told about, by those who ran the prison, he was hated by those who ran it. But those who he had contact with, he built community and fellowship even with his prison guards. There was an individual named Christo Brand who went to be a guard at Robben Island where Mandela was prisoner. Mr. Brand was 18 years old and was very pro-apartheid, very for the racist system that was there. He didn't care for what Mandela and his group was doing, and yet he says this. When he went to be a prison guard, Mandela was 60 years old. And he said when he met Mandela, he was down to earth and he was courteous. He treated me with respect. And I began to respect him. And he says, while even that was a prisoner, a friendship grew. And he transformed my life. Think about that. Prisoner to guard. He transformed my life. He said Brand came to do favors for Mandela. He would smuggle him some bread sometimes. He would bring him from messages from outside. And he broke the rules really drastically once and set up a meeting where Mandela could hold his infant grandson. Yeah. Communities of grace. Communities of coming together. And Mandela's response to that was, I should have had that anyway. Mandela's response to Mr. Brand was, he cautioned him and said, I'm worried about you. If you get caught doing this, you're going to get in trouble. That was his concern. And finally, Mr. Brand says that Mandela wrote my wife and told her I should go back to school so I should continue my education. Think about that. Think about that. As they developed community together. And off of that kind of sense of local community, of community with each other, of intimate relationship, even guard to prisoner, came that sense of love and grace. And I can't help but think that kind of understanding out of Mandela allowed him to be who he was and to work with even within his nation and the world the way he did. In the church, we often talk about God's love for the world, and yet we forget the intimate foundational relationships that is built on. We are not just called to be a church global or a church who sits from this wall to this wall. We're called often to be in fellowship and to know each other. And what if we really looked at that? A number of years ago, I was at a conference. They were teaching about what it means to be the church, what we're talking about today. And there was a gentleman there named Lyle Schaller, who was this, guru in the field. You all got gurus in your field, right? I mean, he'd read the stuff, he'd done the stuff, he knew the scriptural understanding of church, he knew the historical models of church, he knew churches that were working and why, churches that weren't working and why, and you're there to learn what's going on. And he gave us this all set up, but he said, if you really want to know what church is about, listen to these words, and I want to read you something. And when I'm done reading, hold up your hand if you recognize them. He read this, This poetry or song goes like this. Making your way in the world today takes everything you got. Hold on, don't judge. I said, after I'm done, taking a break from all your worries sure would help a lot. Wouldn't you like to get away? Sometimes you want to go where everybody knows your name. And they're always glad you came. That's church. You want to be where you can see.
You want to be where everybody knows your name.
You know, it's God intervenes, I tell you. God and the sound booth are the same sometimes. Yeah. You want to be where you can see our troubles are all the same. You want to be where everybody knows your name. What's that to? Cheers. You know, this guru in the field of church reads us a song from a sitcom about a bar. But isn't that right? I mean, I remember surfing surfing the TV. You know, the channel changer when that show came out. And sometimes I just want to see the beginning of it because I wanted to hear that song. Didn't you? You want to be where everybody knows your name. And that's just not about making sure we can memorize everybody's name. That's about us knowing each other. You can go to a place where you are known, cared about, and loved. That's what that's about. That's what church is about. We as a church need to take serious not just the global mission, but what does it mean for us to be those who are connected to each other in fellowship and in grace. This week, one more last thing before we do our communion, before we gather around the table. This week, we had a meeting of our natural NCD. There you go, Natural Church Development Team. And we've been working on what it means for us to grow spiritually in our lives as well as a community. And part of what we decided to do is by next fall of 08, our goal is to begin 4 new fellowship or koinonia groups. Koinonia was a Greek word used in the early church for us to have small, intimate fellowship groups that grow in faith. That's what koinonia groups are. Many, some of you have probably been in them yourselves. We want to set up 4 new koinonia groups or cheers groups. Just kidding. We probably shouldn't use a bar thing, right? We want to set up 4 koinonia groups where we can experience faith and fellowship in small, intimate settings. We want to put things together where we can grow in our faith. We want to put things together where we can support each other and connect each other on a smaller level. We want to put together a group where we can have communion in a small group. We don't always have to have it here. But we have people who are trained to do the communion together. And we want to set up 4 small koinonia groups. That's our goal. That's all. Just 4. So my question for you is today, all I want you to do is to begin to think and to pray about what kind of fellowship you need in your life. Perhaps when we present more of what this is about, you know, these are things that will be helpful to you in growing in your faith. A need you have in your life, a need of fellowship. So pray about that. Think about that. Talk about that with others. We are very serious about doing these. And once we do, you know, it will help all of us growing in our faith, but also growing in our ministry, in our mission. So keep that in your prayers. Let's bow for a moment of prayer. Loving God, we thank you for church this day. And we thank you for the fellowship that we can have even in this place. We thank you for the gift of your Son, his resurrection for our lives, and especially what that means for us. That we're just not free to know salvation in our individual lives. But we can know that resurrection spirit in which we can be free to love each other. That's our challenge. Free to love each other and free to grow in community. So Lord, continue to bless our redeemers in those ways of love and grace that we might grow in love with each other even more as we know we are different and even have disagreements, but we might grow as church. So touch each of us. Strengthen our friendships in grace. Strengthen our families in love. And continue to help us grow in ways of community and fellowship with our world around us. All this we pray in Jesus' name.